Welcome to The Critique, where today we are diving into the dynamic architecture of viability, which is it's an incredibly ambitious transdisciplinary monograph that synthesizes thermodynamics, autopoiesis, active inference, and exceptional mathematics into a unified framework for understanding life and relational dynamics.
Yeah, it is a massive piece of work.
It really is. I can see what you're going for here. Let's see how we can strengthen this. I want to jump right into completeness and focus, specifically looking at that mathematical bridge.
Right, the math. So the leap from the Fano plane seven-function viability grammar up to exceptional Lie groups, like E8, it introduces this really steep abstraction gradient.
And that gradient threatens to decouple the whole framework from its biological grounding, right?
Exactly. That abstraction gradient is the immediate tension we need to interrogate here. Because, I mean, the manuscript does a fantastic job laying out the Fano plane as a minimal grammar.
Yeah, which is a brilliant foundation. You've got those seven recurrent functions: constraint, margin, state, disturbance, perception, regulation, and options.
Right. And grouping those functions into balanced triads, it gives the reader a highly tangible way to diagnose relational failure across, well, entirely different scales.
From cellular metabolism all the way up to geopolitical conflicts.
Exactly. And the author establishes this rigorous pairwise complete incidence with those triads. The reader actually feels secure in that geometry.
They do. But then, and this is where we hit a wall, as we hit part five, we suddenly ascend into the octonians.
Yeah, octonians, Freudenthal triple systems, E8.
Right. And the core weakness here is that this massive mathematical lift, it feels driven more by an aesthetic resonance, you know, like a desire for mathematical symmetry rather than by a strict explanatory necessity.
Yes, absolutely. For a rigorous scientific reader, the gap between an eight-dimensional non-associative algebra and the very grounded macroscopic case studies we see later on.
Like the coral reef bleaching or the septic shock examples?
Right. The gap between those is vast and largely unbridged. Leaving that gap unbridged risks losing the reader entirely.
Well, it feels a bit like designing a stunning eight-dimensional map for a city, but the traffic on the ground, I mean the actual biology, is still only driving in three dimensions. That is a perfect analogy. The author even explicitly notes in the text that the mathematical relations of the E8 structure are exact, but they acknowledge that their relevance to biological organization remains conjectural.
Which is a dangerous word to use there. Presenting such complex math as merely conjectural can quickly feel disconnected if we don't see it operationalized in the physical world.
Right. The exceptional structures seem to hover above the biology rather than emerging necessarily from the biological constraints. So the suggestion to fix this structural mismatch is to anchor the mathematical lift to a specific mid-scale dynamical model.
Before jumping into the deep end of exceptional geometry, right?
Exactly. We have to show the math working on a localized physical problem. The text needs to prove the superiority of these complex algebraic structures over simpler associative or linear models.
Before claiming them as a universal architecture for viability, let's formulate some concrete examples of what that anchoring actually looks like for this specific manuscript.
Okay, so if we take non-associativity, specifically the octonionic associator, the manuscript proposes this mathematical property as a measure of lawful path dependence in biology.
But rather than just stating that conceptually, the author should demonstrate exactly how the sequence of clinical interventions in the septic shock scenario yields a mathematically distinct outcome depending on the order of operations.
Yes, let's pull that apart a bit. In a standard linear model, the grouping of variables doesn't change the outcome.
Right.
But in a non-associative framework, the order of grouping fundamentally alters the result. The author needs to show the reader mathematically. Does perception, followed by regulation, when combined subsequently with a disturbance, equal perception combined with a grouped regulation and disturbance?
So in clinical terms, they need to map those variables straight to the hospital bed.
Precisely.
Like, does recognizing the physiological shock and intervening with intravenous fluids before the pathogen cascades further, does that equal a scenario where you recognize the shock while the pathogen and the delayed intervention are simultaneously crashing into each other?
That's exactly it. By plugging those clinical variables of delayed source control directly into the associator formula, the author could prove that the non-zero result perfectly maps to the physiological reality of the patient.
Oh, wow. Yeah, that kind of clinical mapping makes the math undeniably necessary.
It really does. Another concrete way to ground this could focus on the altimeter concept introduced in the text.
Oh, right, the altimeter. They could run a simple numerical simulation of that, couldn't they?
They absolutely could. They could prove mathematically that a quartic-inspired invariant detects relational deterioration better than standard pairwise statistics.
So, for example, the silent depletion of cardiovascular reserve in that same sepsis patient.
Right. If the text can show that the octonionic, or E7 structures, detect a physiological collapse, say, 3 hours before standard hospital metrics do, the reader will happily follow the author into the deepest waters of exceptional geometry.
Because they've proven its worth. But, you know, here's the danger of anchoring that math. Even if you prove the exceptional geometry works on a local septic shot case, the reader isn't going to care if they don't know what overarching hypothesis you're actually trying to prove.
Yeah, the math needs a conceptual target. And right now, the manuscript hides that target.
Which leads us perfectly into our second critique on structure and flow. The placement of the core empirical hypotheses at the very end of the manuscript dampens the momentum of the transdisciplinary synthesis.
It really does. The sheer distance the reader has to travel before they get to the empirical payoff is a major structural bottleneck.
The cognitive load placed on the audience is just huge. I mean, the reader wades through dense ontology, triune aspects, Wilbur's AQAL maps, and Kastrup's analytic idealism for, what, 37 consecutive pages?
Yeah, 37 pages. They are absorbing massive, paradigm-shifting concepts one after another, but they don't encounter the actual testable bridge hypothesis until part 8.
Right. Hypotheses like the effective compression hypothesis or the margin optionality hypothesis. The falsifiable research program is essentially treated as an appendix.
That's clearly laid out. I wonder, though, if we've considered how a scientific reader processes 37 pages of untested theory.
Well,
they might start categorizing the work as pure metaphysics long before they reach the brilliant empirical tests. The discipline of the mapping is hidden in the back, and their patience might expire before they discover the framework is actually falsifiable.
Let me push back on that slightly, just on behalf of the author's structure. Couldn't one argue that the author needed to build the entire philosophical scaffold first so that the reader understands why these specific hypotheses are being tested?
I mean, sure, the theory has to be established.
Right, because you can't really test the intrinsic identity hypothesis of affect if the reader doesn't first understand the triune aspect process monism that frames it. Doesn't the theory have to precede the test?
It does, but consider the idea that interleaving the tests actually proves the scaffold strength in real time.
Oh, I see.
If you build a massive, complex theoretical scaffold, you want to show it bearing weight immediately. Otherwise, the reader is just staring at 37 pages of metal piping, wondering if it can even hold up a building.
That makes total sense. So the structural suggestion here is to invert the hierarchy.
Yes, the author should introduce the specific failure conditions and testable hypotheses alongside their corresponding theoretical concepts, rather than keeping them in a holding pen at the end of the text.
Let's give some concrete examples of how to execute that structural inversion without disrupting the theoretical flow.
Okay, well, if we go back to part 2, where the 7 Fano triads are first introduced, it currently reads as a static conceptual layout.
Right.
Instead, the author should immediately pair those triads with the triadic closure hypothesis and its failure conditions from part 8.
So by stating, you know, here are the biological triads, and here is exactly how we will test if they matter more than pairwise associations, the text instantly shifts the tone.
Exactly. It moves from, here is a novel way to think about biology, to, here is a novel way to measure biological failure. It brings an empirical engine to the ontology.
Another concrete example would be to introduce the margin optionality hypothesis right when the text discusses the 2008 financial crisis case study in Part V.
Yes. The author is already exploring how financial leverage silently erodes margin while headline asset prices look stable.
Right? So they should just drop the hypothesis right into that section. Demonstrate how declining relational reserve provides an early warning of collapse and explicitly list the mathematical parameters for falsifying that claim within the financial model.
Or alternatively, the author could structure the entire manuscript around these tests, like open each major part of the text with the core hypothesis it intends to prove.
Oh, using the hypothesis as the framing device for the dense ontology that follows.
Yeah. This tells the reader, look, we are going to explore some deep metaphysical concepts, but we are doing it specifically to solve this testable problem.
Moving those empirical tests up doesn't just build momentum, it builds an immense reservoir of scientific trust with the reader.
And the author is going to need every ounce of that trust because of the manuscript's most daring conceptual leap.
Which brings us to critique 3 on audience alignment, the integration of theological concepts, specifically the greatest commandment and the biology of love, risks alienating a strict scientific audience if the epistemic boundaries are not flawlessly maintained.
This is a highly delicate synthesis. We really have to acknowledge the immense ambition here and validate why the author is reaching for these concepts.
Because the manuscript argues that a system can be internally coherent, like an autopoietic tumor successfully replicating or an extractive financial market generating profit, but completely life incoherent for its broader environment.
Right, and the author recognizes that a normative test is absolutely required to distinguish between a thriving ecosystem and a successful cancer.
They are searching for a way to define life coherence, and to do that, they reach into theology, pulling in the greatest commandment, the imperative to love your neighbor.
It's a beautiful sentiment, and intuitively, it captures exactly what a thriving, interconnected system should look like. But the weakness here is the jarring epistemic clash it creates on the page.
Yeah, because while the author explicitly states in the text that this is not an attempt to turn theology into neuroscience, they still attempt to acknowledge the domain discipline.
But then they use phrases like love judges the conservation directly after pages of rigorous analysis on active inference, free energy principles, and Deakin's teleodynamics. It creates severe cognitive friction.
It violently blurs the line between a descriptive biological matrix, which tells us what a thermodynamic system does, and a prescriptive moral theology, which tells us what a conscious system ought to do.
Right. You are jumping from the physics of how a cell maintains its boundary to the moral imperatives of the Gospel of Matthew.
Exactly.
Is there a risk that focusing solely on the profound spiritual resonance of these ideas might overlook the secular friction it introduces to a strict systems theory audience?
I think there's a huge risk there. The climax of the entire synthesis relies on McMurtry's life value approach and Maturana's biology of love.
But when the text suddenly invokes the greatest commandment and explicitly cites scripture, a scientifically rigorous reader might completely disengage.
They might feel like a bait and switch has occurred, moving from thermodynamics to theology without warning, which undermines the empirical trust the author worked so hard to build.
To protect the author's own work from skeptical scientific readers, we have to establish a clear boundary.
So the suggestion here is to frame the theological resonance strictly as an emergent normative heuristic for life coherence at the social and planetary scales.
Crucially, this must be done utilizing the secular systemic vocabulary established earlier in the text, rather than introducing biblical nomenclature into the main theoretical argument.
Let's detail some concrete examples of how to rewrite these sections. First, reframe the section currently titled The Greatest Commandment as relational grammar.
Focus it purely on the structural dynamics of multi-agent game theory, structural coupling, and planetary feedback loops.
Right, the author can achieve the exact same normative endpoint, proving that extractive systems ultimately collapse their own viability without the theological framing.
But what about the usage of the word love? It's central to the latter half of the manuscript. How does the author maintain that concept without triggering that epistemic clash?
While the author should use love exclusively in Humberto Maturana's technical sense of legitimate otherhood, it needs to be treated strictly as a relational mechanism that protects generative margin within a system.
Ah, I see. For example, the author can map the love of neighbor principle explicitly to the second-person window co-regulation metrics.
Yeah. If we look at the U.S.-Israel-Iran conflict case study in the text, the author could demonstrate how recognizing legitimate otherhood mathematically prevents a self-confirming loop of escalation.
What the Fano Plane calls an XTR loop, or state disturbance regulation failure.
Exactly. By removing the explicit scriptural citations, the author preserves the secular scientific framing while mathematically proving why mutual recognition is necessary for systemic survival.
Translating the theology into the language of structural coupling is one powerful method. Another concrete option would be to move the explicit theological mappings entirely out of the main text.
Put them into a dedicated appendix?
Yeah, or a completely separate postscript for those specifically interested in the spiritual and historical resonance.
I think that appendix approach honors the author's transdisciplinary vision perfectly. It allows them to document the undeniable resonance between their exceptional mathematics and ancient wisdom traditions, but it physically separates the epistemic domains.
It signals to the reader, you know, the science, the math, and the empirical tests stand entirely on their own in the main text. If you want to explore how this framework maps to human spiritual traditions, turn to the appendix.
That protects the manuscript's credibility with its primary scientific audience, while still capturing the profound holistic vision the author has achieved. It ensures the mathematical bridge they are building is evaluated on its structural integrity rather than the spiritual beliefs of the engineers.
Exactly. Well said.
Thanks. So let's pull all of this together to give the author a clear path forward. We've covered three main areas to tighten this incredibly ambitious framework. First, anchor the exceptional mathematics like the octanionic associator and the E7 quartic to concrete dynamical models.
Right. The author needs to run a localized simulation on the septic shock case to prove the math physically models biological path dependence better than standard linear models. Show us the engine working in the chassis.
Second, interleave the falsifiable hypotheses throughout the text. Bring them out of the holding pen at the back of the book and pair them directly with theoretical concepts like the Fano triads and the AQAL maps the moment they are introduced.
Let the reader test the theoretical scaffold while it's being built. It really reduces cognitive fatigue and builds empirical trust.
And finally, tightening into the epistemic boundaries when introducing normative concepts like life coherence. Frame them as emergent systemic heuristics using secular vocabulary, like Maturana's legitimate otherhood, and move explicit scriptural resonance to an appendix to preserve the strict scientific tone of the core thesis.
This manuscript is already a brilliant synthesis. I mean, the integration of autopoiesis, active inference, and life value is highly original.
By grounding the abstract math, reorganizing the empirical test for immediate impact, and securing those epistemic boundaries, this work will evolve from a fascinating hypothesis into an undeniable tour de force.
We highly encourage the author to implement these structural and thematic tweaks. The ambition of this work deserves to be met with maximum clarity.
Once you've executed these revisions, please submit the manuscript back to the critique for another look. We would genuinely love to see how it evolves.
It's a remarkable piece of thinking. Taking the time to build these bridges for the reader will ensure the ideas have the impact they deserve.
Because in the end, it doesn't matter how beautiful your eight-dimensional math is if the commuter on the ground can't read the map. But if you can show us exactly how that blueprint stops the traffic jam in real time, well then, you haven't just drawn a theoretical map. You've built a bridge that can actually carry the weight of the world.